You are Locked On Rockies, your daily Colorado Rockies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Rock on, Rockies and Reds fans. Welcome into an exciting Locked On crossover episode. Thank you for making Locked On Rockies or Reds your first listen every day. We are free and available on every platform. I am joined today by the one, the only Jeff Carr of Locked On Reds. Jeff, how's it going?
Paul, it's good to be talking to you, man. Doing pretty good. The weather has started to cool down a little bit here in Ohio, so I got sweatpants on instead of sweat shorts, so that's nice.
I'm a man who appreciates both the sweatpant and the sweat shorts as well. I'm a year-round sweat shorts when I can, sweatpants in that when you can't. They're the best short, except yes. I will say, need more consistent pockets. I have too many issues where my things fall out of my pockets.
Yeah, they either build big enough pockets for like a key, or they build pockets that go down to your knee. It's really weird.
But luckily, I've a couple with zippers, so that's been one of the nice kind of things that are going. I'm actually rocking more of a pants made of a towel consistency right now for my shorts. But it's beautiful here in the Pacific Northwest in fall. It's cool. It's nice. The football's not so nice here, but it's real nice there in Cincinnati, Ohio right now. Bearcats are what, number three now, maybe higher after this weekend? Number two, because Iowa just got beat, right?
At least in the AP. We only look at the poll where the Bearcats are the highest, and they're the highest in the AP. The coaches poll still has them in number three. But yeah, since Iowa in the AP dropped all the way down to number 11. But yeah, it's nice that football is kind of picking up where baseball really dropped the ball, because I've never experienced a football season quite like this, where both the Bengals and the Bearcats are winning. This is awesome.
Yeah, Bengals are good. Jamar Chase and Joe Burrow, that's a great combo. Great for my fantasy team. I had my eyes on Jamar Chase all day. When Joe Burrow says he has a favorite target, I'm going to go ahead and say smart deal to get that target on your team. And it's been working out really, really great. But I completely feel you, Jeff, though. The football started great and unfortunately kind of exposed what I think a lot of people really thought about the Broncos anyway. Those teams that they beat in the beginning of the year, you should beat. But I will say, I think the Broncos should have beat the Steelers, and I thought I was expecting a much better performance from them yesterday against a Raiders team that has been dealing with quite an interesting week in terms of ownership and things like that.
I know there was that whole speculation of, well, maybe Gruden was actually holding the Raiders back and they'll show us one way or the other this week. I don't know if we know that to be true, but yeah, it's interesting to see how the Broncos go. And I think they'll probably make an adjustment. I think it's one of those where they did pretty well for the first three games and then people got film and figured out how to adjust accordingly to them. And they're going to make their own adjustment now.
It's really the defense that's been the big disappointment for me so far. They were supposed to be the big piece of the team. Teddy Bridgewater, although not incredible, didn't look amazing yesterday, especially in terms of turnovers, has really, you know, he really kept the turnovers down for most of the year and it's been good. But there's your Locked On Baseball host perspective on some football. I mean, I think most Colorado sports fans honestly are more excited for the Nuggets and the Avs going forward, because those two teams are the teams to be watching in terms of Colorado. But let's talk baseball, and let's talk specifically some Reds and Rockies baseball. And let's start with the Septembers, because you mentioned, you know, with the way baseball season ended in Cincinnati, not so great. There's a lot of storylines there, though. I think Cincinnati did underperform down the stretch, but how the heck are you supposed to keep up with St. Louis? What the heck's going on there?
That was the thing. It's like, if there's any silver lining, it's that it took a Herculean effort from the team that actually made the playoffs. It just sucks that it was St. Louis. Like, all Reds fans looked at this and was like, you know what? We want a do-over, and if we can't make it, then we want the Padres to make it, because what the heck? We don't want St. Louis to do that. They had, I believe it was their longest winning streak ever in franchise history, and they're pretty old. So it's not like saying this is the first time they've done it since, like, you always hear those stats like, this is the first time this has happened since 2018. You're like, 3 years, that's it? In the terms of baseball, that's like a day. Come on.
Right.
But yeah, in the whole career, or in the whole franchise history of the Cardinals, that win streak. But on the other side, it was like, I've heard some people try to console me a little bit and say, well, they were kind of out over their skis for most of the season. They were playing way above their projections and things like that. And I'm like, I hear you, but whenever that kind of happened, we saw some things that changed our expectations. And this was the period of time that ownership had basically told us, like, wait, we're going to be competitive. Wait, you know, endure through 2014 through 2019, and then we're going to have some good competitive teams. So this was right there smack dab in the middle of when we thought we were getting competitive baseball, and to see it just flatline so much in September, it was like, it was a beatdown for Reds country. And we're still kind of picking up the pieces as we look ahead to this offseason.
Because, you know, one of the things I think it might be an interesting parallel is teams that have been saying the competitive is coming, the competitive is coming. And while the Reds might have overperformed at some point in the season, when you look at the Seattle Mariners, a team that took, you know, overperformed all year and was in it literally until game 162 in the, I think it was the eighth inning that the Red Sox had finally won and eliminated them. I was working that game with the radio team in Seattle, and they were already down 7-2 at that point. Shohei comes up and hits a home run. In the most Mariners thing ever, Shohei Ohtani leads the game off in the biggest game in a decade with a home run, and it's just like, oh, come on. But anyway, you know, Seattle's got to be sitting here, and everyone here is sitting here like, you know what? This season was great still. We didn't break the curse yet, but 90 wins? I mean, you got to be excited, and Seattle's got to be sitting there being excited. Well, I feel like Reds can look at Seattle and kind of point a little bit and be like, you know, what's going on over there? Why isn't it? It's not, you know, the same thing, but I still think there's some parallels that you can make between those two teams.
Seattle's a good one. And I hadn't really thought about making that parallel just yet, because the one parallel that I really wanted, and it's not a parallel as to what happened, it's a parallel to what should happen, is Atlanta. Atlanta came into the trade deadline with a losing record, and they weren't even in the playoff hunt. I mean, they were in the playoff hunt, but they were kind of far back at that point. But they saw the opportunity in the NL East, and they went all in, and they went and they got the guys despite missing their alpha in Acuna. And wow, I didn't even plan that one. Alpha Acuna. That should be his nickname.
There you go. Well, you think you're onto something.
Alpha Acuna. But thinking of teams like that, and then speaking of out over their skis, the Giants, like, they were supposed to win 77 games, and then they went 107. Like, come on. So I get it from a perspective of, yeah, maybe you can chill out a little bit, but I just don't want to, Paul.
Well, and perfect opportunities for, and you know, let's highlight a little conversation here. You know, if the Reds did kind of a Braves mindset, there's an argument to be made. There's a storyline where Trevor Story and John Gray are Cincinnati Red for the second half of 2021 in something that's considered a playoff push. I mean, Trevor Story was sitting there waiting probably to be traded to anybody at that point. John Gray, while he wanted to stay in Colorado, I mean, they haven't gotten the deal done. So looking at this, like, John Gray and the Rockies, they were supposed to be the one big free agent that was coming this offseason, that the Rockies, that I was expecting a contract on after his last start, no matter, or before his last start. Here's his contract. Here's what, you know, we love him. John Gray still isn't signed with the Rockies right now. And because, you know, but I got to tell you, I was sleeping on the Braves. I did not expect them to be in the position I didn't expect them to be here, and let alone up 2-0. But I got to say, Jeff, I have no issues with them having home field advantage. That them's the rules. I mean, I mean, sorry, LA, the Dodgers, like, you've had to deal with what everyone else has had to deal with playing against you in the playoffs for 8 years. it's just kind of the way I feel about it. I'm sorry that the Giants, that there was another 100 win team in the NL West. I don't feel bad for the Dodgers at all.
That's the one thing, like, I respect the way that the wild card is set up, whether it's one game or a series, that's debatable for the future. But when you look at the fact that a team is a wild card team because they don't win the division, that puts a premium on the regular season. And I don't want to see that premium removed. So I like that that's where we are with the Braves Dodgers series. And the Braves, man, they were the longest odds to win the World Series, and now they're in the driver's seat to even get to that big dance, let alone be so far out of it that people aren't even counting them in. I mean, their pitching has been absolutely amazing in the postseason, and that's something that Reds fans can speak to because they shut the Reds out for 22 innings last year. But they have done absolutely everything that they need to, and the lineup continues to do the whole pesky thing. Like, everybody keeps talking about it, so this isn't a this isn't a very unique point of view when it comes to the Atlanta Braves, but it doesn't matter who's on the mound. They are making that dude work. And whether you're Max Scherzer or whether you're facing the last dude off the bullpen for the Dodgers, that is always going to be a problem.
And it just shows, I mean, you know, even though it hasn't worked out, that depth of the Dodgers is so dangerous, but it's just playoff baseball. I mean, these are the best. The Dodgers have some of the, you know, the best pitchers we've ever seen in across starters into bullpens. And, you know, they're still doing it. And that play last night, that's literally the definition of hit the ball hard and play. Good things will happen. Boom. Hard enough right up the middle. Hits hard enough. It ricochets and goes off. Boom. You're up 2-0 in the NLCS. It's a great series. And honestly, again, just going to keep playing my little tiny violin for Dodgers fans as I'm sitting here as the host of the Rockies. But we got lots more to talk about. I want to talk to you some more about some great playoff teams from your division. But first, let me tell you about DirecTV Stream. Does this sound familiar? You've got one device that lets you catch the game live. Another lets you stream your favorite shows. You're watching sports highlights on your phone, and you've got your neighbor's best friend's login for the good stuff. Well, I want to tell you about a simple way to get all that entertainment you love without the hassle, and a great way to finally get your TV together. It's called DirecTV Stream, and it brings your live TV and on-demand favorites together like never before, so you can watch your favorite sports, movies, and shows all in one place. That means no more juggling remotes and no need to buy another device ever again. And the best part, there's no annual contract. So get rid of the clutter and the confusion and get your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more at DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. Compatible device required. Content varies by package. Again, that's DirecTV Stream. You can check it out. Visit DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. Get all your streaming, everything in order with DirecTV Stream. But, Jeff, here, we're talking you know, a little crossover fun, a little offseason stuff. Yeah. Two teams, Cincinnati, near and dear to my heart. Lots of ties, maybe for your Reds fans out there. Proud Ohio University alum right here. Athens, big Bobcat fan. Bobcats finally winning some football as well, even though the post-Frank Solich era has not been kind to them there. But Jeff, my question for you here, the Reds saw two teams in their division go to the playoffs this year, the St. Louis Cardinals and the Milwaukee Brewers. Nolan Arenado comes out and says he's staying. I will say, until the Cardinals went on that run, I did have in the back of my mind an absolute nightmare scenario of Nolan Arenado opting out and becoming a Dodger, in which I really would have had a rough time watching baseball. But he stays there, he proves that he's great. He hits incredible with not being at Coors Field. He's great in the field. But I got to ask, are you more worried about kind of the old vet run St. Louis Cardinals that showed that they have just this history of good baseball players that have been good for like two decades now, and they can make it rest? Or are you scared of the three-headed dragon pitching of the Brewers, who can't seem to figure it out in the postseason though?
That is the interesting thing, is that when they get to October, it seems like Milwaukee forgets what got them there, and that's why
Colorado.
Yeah, yeah. But I still think it's Milwaukee. Like, the thing with St. Louis is they're always pesky. They are a well-run organization from top to bottom, whether you're looking at the single-A team all up to major leagues. And I know that there's that whole stupid thing, the Cardinal way and blah, blah, blah. I hate that. It's the most annoying thing ever. And I think any baseball fan outside of St. Louis hates that term. But they know how to keep a relatively safe contending bet on the field. Like, we're talking about a team that even in their worst of years is barely under 500. You're never going to see a Cardinals team flirt with 100 losses. Like, I just don't know that that will ever happen. They just are so good at keeping everything loaded and ready for the future, as well as contending for the present. So I think that they're always going to be there, but Milwaukee just looks like the class of the division right now. They've built an amazing pitching staff, whether you're looking at the starting rotation or the bullpen, because Freddie Peralta was a dude who I remember a couple of years ago, whenever the Reds would face him, I'd be like, great, this dude, he doesn't throw strikes at all. We're going to have a nice game. And that was the case. But then he figured out how to throw strikes, and now he's a really good pitcher. And you put him on top of Woodruff and Burns, which are just two ridiculous Cy Young contenders year in and year out. For the last couple of years, Reds fans have been really happy with Luis Castillo and Sonny Gray at the top, but they're nowhere near as good as Burns and Woodruff right now. Those dudes are consistent every night. And then you go to that bullpen, which, I mean, I don't know that Devin Williams was the reason that the Brewers weren't good in that series, but
yeah,
the fact that he breaks every bone in his hand in a celebration doesn't help the Brewers in the postseason. But when you look at him leading into Josh Hader, and then you've got this conglomeration of dudes who are also good at relief pitching, and Boxberger and Aaron Ashby, and you've got the long guys and Lauer and Suter. It's such a full pitching staff that you don't have to have a world beating lineup to win a game. You just got to score 3 or 4 runs, and they've been pretty good at doing that. And oh, by the way, they made the best trade. I still think, looking back on this season, for any team in baseball, the best trade that was made was them getting Willy Adames from the Rays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but the big question, yeah, it's frustrating because that is a classic thing. I will say, you got to, it's a clear example of the risk that the Brewers do run, that you got to be scoring the playoffs against the best. And, you know, your pitching staff can keep you in close games. It can keep you there. But if you're not scoring at all, I mean, obviously, I mean, all it takes is one run off a pro batter is going to get one run off a pro batter, you know, whatever. I totally messed that up. But, you know, Raimel Tapia, 6 home runs this year, 2 of them, DeGrom and Scherzer. So, I mean, that just shows you the example of, like, anyone can run into one, and that changes everything. And offense is important. And that kind of leads me to my next question is, what's going to happen with Christian Yelich? I mean, if he's the big question mark, because I feel like if he was going off that, you know, with Nolan coming into St. Louis, he was kind of bring to, you know, with that, I feel like maybe a little rivalry between those two players is kind of what we've seen those two be elite of the elite. But Christian Yelich, I mean, not just falling off, I mean, hitting, you know, plummeting to earth rapidly and hard. Like, it's crazy.
I wonder if it's not like a underlying nagging injury, like not something that a doctor is going to, like, say, no, you can't play with this. Like, he obviously was healthy enough to play, but I feel like there was something that was affecting his swing, because he still had that ability. He still had the plate discipline and the ability to get on base. It's just when he swung the bat, he wasn't doing much damage. And that's definitely not the Yelich that we know, because looking around this division, it was like between Yelich and Suarez, like, who was having the worst year. And then Suarez at least had a nice last month of the season. But when I think about Yelich, I think he's probably going to bounce back. It's probably something that the offseason will heal, whatever it is, and he's going to be just fine next year, because that is their dude in the middle of the lineup. Like, say what you will about some of the guys that they brought in, even Adames. Like, it was cool that Adames stepped up when they needed him to, but that's not the guy that they're relying on next year. He's going to be the complement to Christian Yelich, and they need Yelich back if they're going to be the class of the National League. They're the class of the NL Central, but if they're going to be the class of the National League, they need Christian Yelich back. And I think he bounces back, because I think that the bit that I got to see him, like, against the Reds and things like that, it seems like he's just a little bit off. Like, a tweak here will probably be all he needs.
And it's crazy how much that is definitely a baseball thing too. Just something, just a little strain that you couldn't get right all year, that when you twist, you can't get that full torque when you're swinging. It's all that small stuff. And in a player like Christian Yelich, it probably does just take something minuscule and to fix it. Speaking of fixing things, the offseason is here. What are you hoping for from the Reds? And are there some Rockies that you're looking at that you're hoping that that you'd like the Reds to take a little bit of a flyer on?
It's interesting, because I know that we're really going to get into this conversation a little bit later on, but the number one thing that I want the Reds to do is simply keep Nick Castellanos. I think if you do that, a lot of other stuff falls into place. But if you don't do that, then you've got a huge hole in the outfield that you got to figure out how you're going to fill that. Plus, you still have a bullpen that maybe you don't have to completely rebuild, because I feel like they have some talented middle relief guys, some talented 6th, 7th, 8th inning guys. They just don't have that hammer. They don't have the bullpen ace. I'm hesitant to say the word closer, because David Bell, his philosophy with running a bullpen, he doesn't like thinking of a guy as simply the 9th inning guy. He thinks of the guy as, I want that dude that if the bases are loaded in the 6th and I need one out, I have this one dude that I know I can count on for that one out, and then we'll build out the rest of the game. They don't have that guy right now, but they could go get that guy. And I think that other than keeping Nick Castellanos, that should be their number one priority, because they've got guys coming up through the farm system who are going to be in the starting rotation next year. They've got Jose Barrero, who by all rights, it should be his job to lose the shortstop position for next season. It was widely understood that he wasn't quite ready to take the reins this past year. So next year should be the thing. And that was the one idea with like maybe looking at a Trevor Story is that they would have been okay with him only playing this year. The problem was their valuation for a trade is they were literally trading for him for this year. And the Rockies were looking for a lot more than that. So I think that's why the Reds never really synced up and made that deal. Well, it would have been awesome. I would have loved to have seen that. But when I look at the Rockies, I mean, Story would be interesting. But the thing is, the infield is just so cluttered. Like, second base is spoken for. Jonathan India is the Reds' second baseman for the foreseeable future. Like, he's going to win the NL Rookie of the Year. Yeah, amazing rookie of the rookie year. And Joey Votto is still here for a couple of years. With the DH, he'll probably split some time at first base and playing DH. But then third base is Eugenio Suarez in my – If I were running things, say Eugenio Suarez, and then you just kind of figure out where the crap you got to put Moustakas, because he had a rough year and he was hurt for 85 games. Ooh. And in the games that he played, he hit 206 and he hit 6 bombs. Like, oof, that's not the Moose that they're paying for. And they're paying $38 million over the next 2 years for it. So it's rough days ahead when we're looking at how the Reds are going to utilize him. So they've got to figure out a way to move that money if they're going to get another big money guy. And I think Story's probably out of their price range at this point. But, I mean, if I were looking at some guys, I mean, we were pretty happy with Michael Givens. He's obviously
going to That's actually right. The Michael Givens did the one trade at the deadline for the Rockies. Michael Givens to the Reds.
And who did the Reds send back for that one?
Great question.
I don't remember.
I'm searching.
But losing him, like, that's a dude out of the bullpen that I don't necessarily think he should be considered the bullpen hammer for them, but would be a nice guy to bring back depending on how much it would cost. Well, I think it's probably going to cost around the same money that the Reds said no to Archie Bradley for last season, so they're probably not bringing him back. But they need outfield depth, and they really need a right-handed bat, because everywhere on this lineup you look, they got lefties galore. Like, I feel like no other team in the league has a left-handed hitter, because the Reds just have all of them, and they have a really tough time with left-handed pitching because of that.
The Rockies received minor league right-handers Case Williams and Noah Davis for the Michael Givens trade back in July. Yeah. Are you interested in bolstering your lineup depth with a left-handed bat that hits ground balls at a 67% rate, but still bats 286?
That's an interesting one. Honestly, I really hope that the Reds make a big move for like a right-handed bat, even if they keep Nick Castellanos for whatever reason. And that's the other thing. Like, the other thing that really grinds my gears about Nolan Arenado not opting out is that he had the chance to and he's not doing it, because obviously St. Louis really seems to have a grasp on what they're doing in the future. And I'm pretty sure that it's about a 99.9% chance that Nick Castellanos exercises his opt-out. And mostly because I think the Reds' view of the future is a little clouded.
Clouded views of the future, or at least in this case, different views of the future. But Jeff, before we move on here, I got to tell you about the best tasting protein bar ever, and that is Built Bar. There's so many delicious flavors. There's something for everyone. And like I said, I know you got your favorites, Jeff, but let me tell you about all the great flavors our listeners can check out: the coconut, the cherry barcia, the raspberry, the mint brownie, the double chocolate, the salted caramel, strawberry, orange, cookies and cream, and German chocolate. For those Locked On Rockies listeners, they know I love chocolate, so they know that I'm going for those chocolate bars. Not only are Built Bar flavors the best tasting, but they're healthy too. Check it out. 17 to 18 grams of protein. Calories, they range from only 130 to 180. This is the big one for me. Only 4 to 5 grams of sugar for those Built Bars, and only 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. Amazing flavors, all tasty, all healthy. We got a great deal for you here at Built.com. If you use the promo code LOCK15, you'll get 15% off your order. That's 15% off your order at Built.com when you use the promo code LOCK15. Promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at Built.com, the best tasting protein bar ever. Well, one thing, like you said, that it's not going to happen, but leads in. We teased it a little bit, and I got to tell you, I think the Rockies need to go after Nick Castellanos. I think Nick Castellanos would be a really, really interesting piece for this Rockies team. I think they're looking for outfield, like I mentioned, in case you're curious who that 286 batter, a left-handed batter, who also hits ground balls at a 67% rate, which is 12 higher than the next highest person at Eric Hosmer, who is 15% higher than the next person on the list. That's Raimel Tapia. I love Raimel Tapia. I think he brings a lot of energy. He's fun, but I'm not lying, 67% ground ball rate, 50% ground ball rate, at least for the past full seasons. I think the 2020 season, he got a little bit of a benefit of the doubt with it being shorter. But as much of an X factor as Raimel is, because he hits ground balls through the infield that you're like, that's a single, but no, it turns out to be a double. The Rockies desperately need another big bat, and I think Castellanos not only fills a need for an outfield in defense, but it's a big bat, and I think he would love to hit at Coors Field. I just don't know. And Jeff, I'm curious what your thoughts on this. The Rockies themselves have said that they don't think that they can attract big name free agents, and I just find that very hard to believe for offensive minded players.
I think Castellanos would be super wise to go from the friendly confines in the hitter's park of Great American Small Park to Coors Field, because you go from not, a very big launching pad for homers in Great American to the ultimate launching pad for homers in Coors. And he feasted. I mean, there were a lot of people who tried to take spray charts from when he played with the Cubs, and they would dub them over Great American and be like, see, this double would turn into a homer and this triple would turn to all this other stuff. And they were right. I mean, he had the most homers in his career this year. So I think if I were Castellanos, the Rockies would be one of the first places that I would consider. And not only that, but even from an outside perspective, I think that the Rockies are on the come up a little bit. I don't think that they're looking at, I mean, they don't seem like a team that's about to start over or something like that. In my mind, it just from an outsider's perspective. So I think that that would be a good place for him to go. I think that there's been a lot of Reds fans that have speculated in a doom and gloom sense that he would be a Cardinal. And yeah, kind of like you with Arenado and the Dodgers, I don't want to think about Castellanos playing for the Cardinals, but I think that the Rockies would be one of the first places on my list if I were him, and I found out that the Reds were not interested in paying me a ton of money, which he's going to get paid, because I would be surprised if he opts out and the next deal that he signs is less than $20 million AAV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and see, the thing that's really interesting, I think, with Nick Castellanos is that DH is really interesting, because I think if you're the Rockies, you put Castellanos maybe in right. You got to figure out what you're doing with your other infield pieces or your outfield pieces. Raimel Tapia, Jonathan Daza, and Connor Joe. I mean, he's really the big X factor of coming on this year, of being a player nobody knew anything about, but has just really shined in his small time. Just brings a great presence to the plate and good on defense. But if you could put Nick Castellanos, you find him in the outfield. My thought is you put him in right or maybe left, depending on what happens with Tapia, and Charlie Blackmon heads to being the deep, more of a full-time DH. I think that's a much better call for him, because Charlie Blackmon can still swing it. He's not swinging it as well, but he's still an effective hitter, but his defense is atrocious. And the Rockies need to get if they can keep Chuck's bat in the lineup and improve the defense, that's a win-win, I think, for the Rockies. And you got to be exploring that option, because they do have two their best prospects are two outfielders, but one they just drafted out of high school this year, so he's, good four or five years out probably. And then another one probably, I would say, still needs another year and a half. Maybe you see him if the Rockies are in a similar situation this year. End of 2022 season, he comes up in September and, bats around a little bit and they see what they got. But I think Nick Castellanos would be a great addition to this Rockies club. I think that he's kind of he's not the flashiest name, but he's a big enough name that I think people would get excited about. And he can spread his doom and gloom of hitting more home runs so more catastrophic events can happen in the world, I guess, which we don't want that to happen. But it's kind of funny. Like, as dark as it is, it's ridiculous. And you have to wonder how many of these are fake, but then you look and you're like, oh, no, there it is. He just hit that home run, and then this just happened. I mean,
it's so funny how that works out. But yeah, he would be a heck of an addition. And I think that he should be one of the most sought after dudes in free agency this year, because I think that he is going to be probably a little bit less costly than some of the other ones out there. And that's only because of the injury that he went through, in which he got hit by a pitch and he was out for a while. But before that happened, dude was on track to be an MVP, or at least get significant share of the MVP votes in the National League. And then he goes out for a month and people forget about him. And he still, for at least the better part of the season, contended for the batting title. I mean, Trey Turner and his whole whatever, he just stopped getting out. So that didn't help anything. And then you look at different ways that he can be effective for different teams next year. It's got to start with a ballpark like Coors Field, or if he remains with Great American, or maybe if he goes to New York, God help us, or something like that. I don't know. But I think that he is a dude that should be like a day one signing, because he is a dude who can bring a huge impact to a lineup. And I tell you what, Paul, I got some more questions for you when it comes to the Rockies, but we're going to do a little cliffhanger action. We're going to save it for tomorrow. We're going to talk. Yeah, we got a two-part crossover for Lockdown Reds and Lockdown Rockies. So thank you all so much for watching and listening right here to day one of the Lockdown Reds and Rockies crossover. We'll have day two for you tomorrow. You're not going to want to miss that. And thanks again for making us your first listen. Now go check out Lockdown MLB. Sully's got a look at the playoffs and everything that's going on there. He covers it from all angles. There's nobody that knows baseball past and present than Sully does. Go check him out at Lockdown MLB. But as for Paul and myself, we'll talk to you guys tomorrow.